Two things that are fun 12 months out of the year. Talking Raiders football and tailgating. So let's go with Clay, Vince, and Vinny on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Welcome back into the second hour. It's Raider Nation Radio, the morning tailgate. Vince Sapienza, Vinny Bonsignor. I'm Clay Baker here with you. 702-365-9200 is the number to reach us here on Raider Nation Radio. It's also our text line brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center. Great thoughts up on the text line already at 702-365-9200. We'll read them throughout. And, we even see Brian from the 757 says, Vinny, did you miss out on Showbiz / Chucky back in the day?
I don't get the reference. So what is that?
Yeah, I don't either. Was Showbiz a Southern California?
Maybe one of the characters? Is Showbiz one of the characters? Yeah,
no.
Chucky. And because doesn't he have a gang of associates with
him?
Yeah,
but that's like much later in all the sequels. Like Chucky's a one-man band in the first three.
Oh, I'm talking about, there was a movie?
We talking about Chucky the horror movie?
No, Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah, Chuck E. Cheese.
Like, what are you talking? He was talking about the sequel.
Yeah, I heard Chucky, and I was like, and you go, that's I don't get funny. The reference. I go, are we talking about the movie then? Chuck E. Cheese, yes, he does.
Showbiz.
Showbiz.
Okay, yes.
I was like, I know I drank about 18 beers that day, but there seemed to have been like a whole crew with him.
It was money well spent.
Chuck E. Cheese does have a crew. There's a dog, I think,
maybe that's
playing
Showbiz.
The banjo.
Yeah, there's usually like a chicken or a chickadee,
Yeah, I don't
she
know.
She sings
on
harmony.
Names. Apparently,
I thought we were getting the holiday spirit talking horror movies.
And the Chucky doll actually had a female
doll.
Counterpart in one of the sequels, played by Jennifer Tilly.
That's right. I think it was three.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I do.
Boy,
remember
we're
Jennifer
off
Tilly.
The rails this morning, are we?
Yes.
Oh,
it's
boy.
The smoke. It's the smoke coming in. It's in the back of our throat, and
we should be used to that, Vinny. SoCal guy.
I mean, no doubt about it.
I felt like what I walked out to this morning felt like my high school, elementary days all over.
Right.
Just this is the time of year where,
sadly,
sad truth.
Clay growing up in Detroit had snow days. In California, you have smoke days. There are days where my kids didn't go to school for two straight months because there were the fire in Ventura.
Yeah,
remember that? And
I do.
And it just kept raging, and it was just too dangerous. And some of the kids they lost homes. So literally. And then we moved here, and three and a half weeks here, that's when the pandemic hit, so they couldn't go to school for however long they didn't go to school. So, they had a weird, had a weird school.
It was the worst growing up because we knew as soon as we walked out, we're staying inside during recess, during lunch, like it was over.
And it's right in the middle of football season, so practices are always affected, games are always affected, so it's definitely a real thing. But that was a very earthquakes and fire season.
Yeah.
Always part of the experience.
Okay, apparently Showbiz Pizza Place was a competitor of Chucky's.
Oh!
Thank you for bringing that up back in the 80s. All right, so we'll
Showbiz
see.
Pizza?
Showbiz
no,
Pizza.
I don't remember.
The only competitor to Chuck E. Cheese for me would have been Shakey's. Remember Shakey's? that would have been the only real...
The Mojo Potatoes? Where is the Mojo?
Wow, the Mojo. Look at Vinny going back into the vault.
Speaking about Adam, we introduced him to the All You Can Eat. He's into All You Can Eat. He loves Sizzler, which blows my mind.
Real quick, there's a knockoff brand. There was a Sizzler bank in Southern California. They went out of business. A new knockoff called Sizzlin' showed up in that same spot trying to take advantage of the Sizzler audience.
They better lawyer up. Sizzlin' better lawyer up because that's in trouble. What did Sizzlin' have? Were you able to get in
there?
They
didn't last long.
No?
They didn't last long. It's just like there's In-N-Outs, right, everywhere in Southern California, but there was also a knockoff called Easy Out that was not too far from In-N-Out.
Mm-hmm.
Got to say, Easy Out was just as good. I know. People who love In-N-Out will hate me, but it was real good.
You got to give it a chance.
Yeah, there's a pizza place in California. Drawing a blank, and it's around the tip of my tongue. But anyway, for lunch they have all you can eat pizza and salad bar and everything like that. And it was a revelation for Adam. Adam could not believe it's a pizza. It has a royalty name to it,
like Sir Pizza.
Kind of like that, but it's a chain. It's a total chain. I think there's one in Summerlin.
It'll come to us.
Yeah.
We need to get back on the rails. We need to talk football. Coming up at 8:30, Marcus Johnson, Tape Don't Lie. Again, I'm really excited to talk to him today because
we have film.
We have film to break down, to really kind of get in the weeds a little bit. So we'll talk to him here in a bit. TJ Houshmandzadeh, once a Raider, always a Raider.
Absolutely.
Will join us at 9 a.m. and then Street League with Sam and Ash at 9:45. Let's continue the conversation that we were having as we're turning the page to week two, the Baltimore Ravens.
Where's Lamar physically?
And how does this defensive line now kind of attack Lamar? You know, you talked about Steve Spagnuolo and how he operates with Lamar, kind of creating that fence. You know, this is kind of one of those tests within a test, you know, for the Raiders defensive line. Max Crosby, he's the engine that doesn't stop, right? But it has to be control. Not that he's out of control, but more so than ever, it has to be your details. We talk about run fits and knowing where each person needs to be. This is as important of a game and crucial of a game because Patrick Graham blitzed a lot, created a lot of chaos early on for the Chargers. If we see that again, where Divine Diablo is coming from the outside, or you know, a stunt has to be where Max is going on the inside. If one of those is off and creates a running lane, it's goodbye Lamar Jackson.
And I think you do that against Justin Herbert because you knew Justin Herbert. You had to find out where is he physically in terms of the mobility. So putting that kind of pressure on Justin Herbert made all the sense in the world. But by the way, the scary part of the Chargers is they were able to win that game with Justin Herbert light. He didn't run the ball, and that is a big part of his game.
And that's scary.
But that's what I'm saying.
That's scary.
Because for the first time maybe since he's gotten to the Chargers, they have a legitimate, at least they did on Sunday, 170 yards rushing. I don't care how it came about, how you want to explain it, whose fault it was. The fact is they ran for 170 yards. They didn't need Justin Herbert to be Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's what Jim Harbaugh has been trying to preach. We don't need you to be Superman.
Yeah.
From time to time, we're going to probably need you to be Superman when all else fails and you have that in you, but not on a game-to-game basis, not every single game. That's not sustainable. So they've already shown in week one, we've got a complementary aspect to go with Justin Herbert, and they obviously needed it because he's not Justin Herbert just yet. The rust, the I'm sure the lingering effects of the injury. Imagine what that might look like if that was a legitimate view of their running game. And then when Justin Herbert starts getting better and more and healthier and shakes off the rust, what's that going to look like? So I digress. That's an issue for the last game of the season.
But it's interesting. You know, obviously, well documented last 2 days. I was a big fan of what we saw out of the defense up until it wasn't in the fourth quarter. That being said, as good as they were, they only got to the quarterback one time.
Yeah.
Max only got there one time. So when you look at week two now, I think the success marker looks a little different in terms of the containment of Lamar Jackson. Like, obviously, that defensive line, you want big numbers, right? That's an expensive defensive line for the Raiders. You want big numbers out of that. I think what is deemed a success may not be sacks. It just may just be like, hey, keep him in the pocket, make him throw, let our secondary do the work. Christian Wilkins met with the media on Monday, and you know he was kind of moved around a lot. He even dropped back into coverage one time during that game in week one. He talked about all the different movement, what that looks like, and what it may mean moving forward.
You know, that, and again, that's just kind of football. That's just how it goes. You know, just, you know, that kind of stuff's a part of the game, but you can't really slow us down. We just got to step up more, even on the interior, knowing, you know, when one of your brothers is down or, you know, things might look a little different or you might be thin in some areas. You know, you just got to, you know, continue to lean on that brotherhood that we're building and, you know, understand we don't have to be necessarily superheroes, but we definitely just got to be more locked in and focus and, you know, and make sure we're doing our part. And you know, playing hard, playing fast, playing physical, and being real detailed with our work.
Raiders defensive tackle Christian Wilkins, you talk about not having to be a superhero. Those words are going to ring even more true this week. As I mean, you talk about being disciplined with what you're supposed to do on each play.
And the Raiders are looking at a Ravens team that last week against the Chiefs, the Ravens offensive line was called for illegal formation four times.
Uh-huh.
What they're doing is they're lining up off the line of scrimmage. You know, a little too far for the officials to like. In fact, all the rest of the league combined only had two violations of that illegal formation, and the Ravens had four in one game. So John Harbaugh not really happy with how that looked, but also, you know, they had a rookie right tackle, Roger Rosengarten, that also had a very subpar game, mm-hmm. kind of like rotating in at right tackle. So it makes you wonder, like, you know, what kind of personnel packages will they be using, because they had to use some new faces. Like, you know, for the Raiders, they had to use and really expect a lot out of Charles Snowden. What else could be added to that room? Because we know that there were some signings to the practice squad yesterday.
Yeah, and it's like, as Antonio Pierce talked about, it got thin in a hurry, and so you know, you're gonna just have to make do. You're not, you know, Alan Page or whoever, you know, name the great. They're not coming through. That Reggie, whatever, any great pass rusher that you want to talk about is not coming through that locker room, and you're not going to be able to go trade for anybody of significance. There's nobody on the open market of major significance. I know people are throwing the name around, Yannick Ngakoue. He didn't have a very good season last year, and he's been a liability against the run. I don't think that that's necessarily a viable, you know, solution right now. So they're just going to have to figure it out with what they have. Charles Snowden is going to play a lot. Janarius Robinson is going to have to play a lot. The newcomer, his name is escaping me.
Caleb Vaughn.
Yeah,
exactly. Caleb Vaughn Chasen.
Yeah. I mean, this is a guy that has 5 sacks in – since being drafted in 2020, yeah. He was a first-round pick out of LSU by the Jacksonville Jaguars, washed out there, didn't make the Carolina Panthers. He's still young. That's promising. He's 25 years old. Maybe there's some ceiling left there, but they're kind of scratching at the bottom of the barrel already, and that's the problem with injuries. And then today we'll find out a little bit more about Tyree Wilson. So for now, the newcomer is on the practice squad. I would imagine he's going to get elevated for the game if he's ready to go. Could pick up to whatever level he could pick up the defense or his responsibility. So not good at all, especially going into this game.
Yeah, a lot's going to be asked of Max and Christian in this game, especially just to kind of, I mean, Christian was moved all around once Tyree was ruled out. He was moved all along the defensive line. Didn't look out of place in obviously any sense. But again, that's a lot of expectation on just two guys. That being said, I thought Butler had a great game. Jenkins had a pretty good mm-hmm. game. Like, it's not like there's nobody there, but
right.
There's,
we're talking about the defensive
end.
We're talking
about guys being shifted all around. I would expect to think Charles Snowden is going to have a better game, having a kind of full week of practice of being in the game plan of the defense and kind of knowing what to expect, as opposed to those kind of, you know, he finds out late in the week and then Tyree gets hurt and now he's playing a lot more snaps than he probably expected. He's probably dialed in on special teams, knowing he's doing a lot there as well. So
Max had to play more snaps than expected. They had 100%. Been talking about him.
Yeah, they wanted to ease him off.
That's been the goal, and all of a sudden,
Max has always prided himself on playing 100% of snaps, not coming off the field. The Raiders have owned that and said, look, as great as that is,
right.
And while he can do that, we would like him to not have to do that.
Right.
And that wasn't the case week one. I don't expect that to be the case week two. I want to
I'd be interested to see Amari Gaynor, if he becomes part of the
game plan.
That'd
be interesting.
Because if you look at his history,
that would be interesting.
He's been a pass rusher.
He has experience
rusher.
There, yeah.
And
in college, obviously.
But, yeah, I mean, he's one game into his NFL career, but he does. That's part of his background. In fact, that's the position he's played more often than not. It wasn't put your hand on the ground
right.
and rush the pass.
Which is why I think it was so surprising how well he looked when we saw him in the preseason. He was kind of running the defense as the middle guy almost.
Right, exactly. But he does have a little bit of track record, you know, qualify it in college. But as that rush end outside linebacker, so does he get maybe implemented in the game?
That's a really good point. I'd be interested. I'd say
why not?
Why not? Right? I mean,
he looked good.
You assigned this guy, former first round pick. You know, he's just put on the silver and black for the first time for 24 hours. I mean, why not give the guy who's been impressing you mm-hmm. and making plays at the end of the day, because that's what it's about. But Clay, you brought up something that I do think is interesting, looking ahead to week two, and I do think we talk about, you know, new rule changes and all that stuff in the offseason and points of emphasis. What are the refs going to make a point of emphasis? Well, we saw in that NFL opener in Kansas City, the point of emphasis on the offensive lines and where they lined up. So for those that either didn't see or weren't paying attention, basically offensive linemen try to get as much room between them and the line of scrimmage as they possibly can get to give them a chance to get in their sets and create some cushion and, mm-hmm. And distance between them and the defensive line. Well, the Ravens, how many illegal formations did you say?
Yeah, they had four.
Four illegal formation calls where they were too far off the line of scrimmage trying to get that little advantage, and we're like, oh, okay, this is going to be a point of emphasis. What you brought up is, I think, what's fascinating is there was only two of those called the rest of week one. So my question then becomes, okay, is this something that the rest of the league learned from, or was this something that the Ravens had been doing that they're saying, hey, you need to watch this team in particular because this is what they like to do.
Ding, 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 ding.
And so when you look at that, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden, this is where mind games get brought into the game within the game, right? You don't think a guy like Max Crosby, Christian Wilkins are well aware of what was going on mm-hmm. with the Ravens, that they're going to be in the ear of these zebras on Sunday in mm-hmm. Baltimore and be like, hey, do you see where he's lined up?
Yeah.
Because now you have the rookie right tackle. Now you got him thinking. Now you got every guy on the line thinking, oh, where am I lining up? All of a sudden their eyes are down. All of a sudden Max is already in the backfield. Well, you know, those are the things yeah, that man. I find fascinating mm-hmm. to see how that plays out.
Because they were worried about Chris Jones. So they were trying to give themselves any sort of advantage as possible.
Right. Now that's on the offensive line coach to say we can't do that. Obviously it bit us on the butt. They're on to us.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's now line up correctly. This is where you need to line up. And if it continues, and that's on them. Like you've been warned. Not only have you been warned, which I'm sure the warnings came. Those things don't just happen. Somebody complained about it, obviously, and probably throughout the offseason. And the referees got together, and the competition committee got together, and all took a look at that. And we need to address that. You not only have been warned, now you've been slapped on the wrist, and you paid kind of a dear price for four of those infractions. Is a lot in a football game.
It's 20 yards
in a seven point game. Those add up. And how many times did that knock them out of, you know, maybe a third and short,
or just put them off schedule?
Exactly. So if they continue to do that, then that's on them, and shame on you, because it can't be any clearer that the NFL is going to make that call on you guys now. So make that adjustment.
702-365-9200 is the number. You can reach us here on the phones and on the text line. Marcus Johnson from Tape Don't Lie will join us at 8:30. We'll go over some of the things that he popped out from the footage on the game against the Chargers and what to expect against the Ravens. That comes up at 8:30.
Always a good time to talk about our good friends over at Dos Catas Tequila. And always like to mention La Casa Cigar and Lounge over at Tivoli Village, because our good friend Mike Prieto, a huge Raider fan, by the way, has partnered up with Dos Catas Tequila. And what Mike's done is take some of his specialty cigars and paired them up with the various products of Dos Catas Tequila. So you can go to La Casa. A beautiful, totally chill vibe. There's always going to be music. There's always going to be Raiders talk. And sip on some great Dos Catas tequila and enjoy it with one of Mike's specialty cigars that he's paired up with it. So go check out Mike Prieto and Les Cacahuna over at La Casa Cigar and Lounge. And if you want to just go to the store and purchase some more Dos Catas tequila, Total Wine and Lee's Liquor, both and all of their establishments here in Las Vegas are fully stocked with Dos Catas products. And if you're not here in Las Vegas, don't even worry about it. You can go to DosCatasSpirits.com, make your order online, and have it delivered to you wherever you are. All the details are at DosCatasSpirits.com.
Do you feel it? I feel like this music is us, the three of us, just in the tunnel. There's smoke. You know what I mean? The crowd's
the flashing
just getting,
lights.
Flashing lights. The crowd's getting amped up.
Urgency.
It's kind of a microcosm of where we are in the week. We're just getting ready to run out onto the field. We're turning the page onto Baltimore. Feeling the music. Feeling the atmosphere, the energy. But before we fully dive in, we got to break down some film one last time.
Yeah, we do. Marcus Johnson will join us in just a minute here from Tape Don't Lie. But people are very hot on the Showbiz Pizza, and like somebody, and I love it because Jason in Maryland absolutely love his stuff. He's very critical of the show, and he's just somebody. He's very strong in his opinions. But we hit a nerve today.
Uh oh.
Because he goes, oh yeah, you guys are talking about Showbiz Pizza. which was the same as Chuck E. Cheese, except they had a band with a gorilla, keyboards, and another animal on banjo.
Yeah, somebody tweeted us a picture of what that looked like, and that is frightening.
It was like an imagination gone haywire with the animatronics.
What was the movie I was just talking about on Netflix? What's it called?
Five Nights at Freddy's.
We watched, my wife and I watched that, and first of all, I was like, yeah, this is Chuck E. Cheese if everything, but now that I saw the Showbiz Palace, boy, I'm frightened.
You got to be careful when you order the mushroom pizza. I'm just saying.
And the place you were referring to,
Round Table Pizza,
which is another hot spot where we went to. There's one here, but we were talking about back in the day. Mm-hmm. They were a true rival because they had games. They had like air hockey, skee ball, pop a shot. They had different things where you won tickets.
Yeah.
So it was similar to...
It was, and they still do have the all-you-can-eat lunch buffet, which Adam was, unaware of. He had never even heard of Round Table Pizza.
Delicious.
And so Vic Tafer, Ed Graney took him, and Paul Gutierrez took him to the one in Santa. And I dropped them off. You're not coming in? I'm like, I'm on the diet.
A little field trip.
I just can't, right? Exactly.
You were the chaperone.
And Adam was, it was like a new revelation. A new world opened up to him. Because like I said, he is all about the salad bar at Sizzler, which used to be a night out.
It was like me with the M&M crisps. I just thought, I don't know what I've been
phenomenal.
All right, let's break down some tape, shall we?
Yeah, Marcus Johnson from Tape Don't Lie up on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe and let it be a part of your life because Marcus and his crew, they break down the film like nobody else. And the way you worked on the Raiders Chargers was really exceptional at the Mark John NFL on X. Marcus, all right, first let's start with some of the good. Let's talk about the work that Jacorian Bennett did at corner. Let's start with that.
I thought the corners played really well overall. Holding Justin Herbert's only 144 yards passing was definitely something you want to be happy about leaving that football game. And I thought Jacorian Bennett really showed out. They didn't play him too many snaps because there's a lot of times when they were playing the run and had Nate Hobbs playing outside. But when they moved Nate Hobbs inside, you saw Jacorian Bennett out there, and he played really well. I mean, he only got targeted a couple times, and they didn't really target the wide receivers too much. But the reason for that is just how well the corners were playing and the positions they were at. And, you just tell that they're in the third year of running Patrick Graham's defense. They have a great understanding of whatever it didn't need to do in the secondary. And I thought Jacorian Bennett did a really good job out there. I just posted a clip like 30 minutes ago about him, playing just the hands on a deep route. And, going into further into the season, if you have that type of cornerback play, when teams are going to be passing a whole lot more, it's going to be a very beneficial for this secondary to have somebody like Jacorian Bennett out there so they can play nickel and be comfortable.
Marcus, I saw something that you tweeted as well this morning. PFF put out the average distance of throws as well as the time these quarterbacks in week one had. And the thing that I took away from mostly was Gardner Minshew had an okay amount of time. He had an okay offensive line, but a lot of dinking and dunking. When I looked back at the film, I thought he was impatient a lot of the time. I'm curious what you saw from Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, it was totally different what you saw in the preseason. I mean, the reason why he stood out a little bit more from Aiden O'Connell was because the willingness to throw deep in the preseason, and you didn't see that from Aiden O'Connell. But in the game, it felt like that he was very hesitant to let the ball go, right, and on time. And I don't know what's up with that, but you saw that a little bit last year with the Colts, too, that it kind of just creeped into the season, and it's totally different than how he was playing in preseason. There was a couple opportunities where he could have hung in there and threw the ball deep downfield a little bit. And, to be fair, I thought Luke Getsy could have helped him out a little bit with a little bit more play action and made him a little bit more comfortable with some of the pockets he was giving. Because some of the bigger chunk plays that they had were off play action. Like there was a 26-yard to Brock Bowers and a 23 to Devontae Adams. And both those plays were off play action. And I thought they could have mixed that in more to maybe make him feel more comfortable. But it was a pure drop back for most of the game. And you can kind of see he started off really well. And then as the game went along, he was missing things. And he just got more, I would say, more conservative as the game went along. And, with the way the Raiders play defense and the way they want to run the ball, you need a quarterback who's willing to push the ball downfield. And you want to see that more from Gardner Minshew. But, his A-dot was really low. A lot of checkdowns, a lot of throws where you felt like that he could have got that ball out to somebody, to a playmaker. Maybe they could have made some plays, but they ended up just checking it down. So Yeah, it was interesting to watch him play, but it was a little bit of what you saw last year from the Colts, and it was just kind of different from what you saw in the preseason.
Correctable, or something that that Raider Nation may need to get accustomed to or used to with Gardner Minshew this year.
Yeah, I think you might have to get accustomed to him a little bit, you know, because you know when I was watching it, and you know you can get on Gardner Minshew a lot about some of the things you do, but I think that he is just. He is who he is at this point. I mean, he's been in the league since about 2019, I believe. And there's not, I don't know how much he can get better at this point. And, you know, there are some good throws in there, you know, mixed in between it. But then there's a lot of those plays where he just, you just want a better quarterback to kind of make those plays. So it's kind of, you know, you're stuck in that position where he's going to look really good at some points because the guys around him are just so good. Like Tucker was getting open. Brock Bowers looked fantastic. Devontae Adams looked fresh. He looked healthy. You know, and you can get into Michael Mayer and some of the other guys, and like, you know, Madison made a play for him. There's a lot of playmakers around him, so I think he's going to have some good games throughout the year, but there's just going to be some frustrating things that's just going to happen just because the caliber of quarterback he is. And it feels like he's more of a backup than he is a starter at this point. And, you know, and when you have that guy as your starting quarterback, it's going to be some disappointing moments, but there's also going to be some good moments mixed in there. So I don't know how much that's going to change because, like I said, we saw that last year from him. There's a play, you know, against the Raiders where Alex Pierce is like running down the field wide open. He doesn't throw it to him. It's just things that kind of happens with him on film a little bit. But, you know, with the weapons that he has around him, I still think there's going to be some good moments. And I think Luke Getsy just got to help him out a little bit more with the play action.
Marcus Johnson, tape don't lie here on Raider Nation Radio. What then did you notice from the offensive line when it was time to run the ball because the production was not there?
Yeah, I thought Adams and Whitehair really struggled. I thought they had a really, really bad game. It was really no way to explain it. You know, I did some charting this week of the offense, and, you know, Andre James, he had about 7 blown blocks this week, and then, you know, Whitehair had about 6. And the rest of the offensive line did okay. I mean, they were pretty solid. Miller had some moments where he lost a couple of pass reps, some reps, but he's pretty good in the run game. Mumford was solid. Dylan Parham really had a really good game, I thought. I thought he really showed that he fits better at right guard. But when you have, if there's 5 guys across the line, so you have 2 guys having a really bad game, it's not going to look good. I mean, there's a lot of times where guys are just kind of just getting penetration right away. As soon as the snap was happening, Puna Ford was dominant against both those guys, and he really gave those guys a lot of problems. So when you see that, those 2 guys kind of mess up, you know, you want Jackson Powers-Johnson to get healthy. I think that's very important, and maybe he can help his offensive line a little bit, maybe get them better on their keys and things like that. But you want Andre James to play better, too, because he is a center. You know, there's a couple, you know, a stunt that Gardner Minshew got sacked on that, you know, that was really on him. But, you know, in the run game, it really showed itself because they were just getting beat up front, just those 2, really. But those 2 guys are in the interior, so when you're running the ball, and those guys are getting beat up, I mean, it's going to mess up the whole offensive line and make them all look bad because they are a unit of 5. So I think, you know, you got to get some better play from those 2 because around them, the other 3 guys were pretty solid. And if you can just get some solid play from those 2, I think the offensive line can be better going forward.
Yeah, Marcus, I saw a lot of whiffs on that interior line. So that goes to show what you're talking about. But I'm curious, is that scheme? Is that execution? Was that just a lack of physicality compared to the Chargers' defensive line? Because it goes back to what Vinny, is it correctable in a short amount of time?
Yeah, I think it's correctable. I think it's a correctable thing. But, you know, Cody Whitehair, he's not really a starter at this point. So, I mean, that's the thing with him. Like, I don't know if he's going to get better. But I think, well, you get some more physical guys like Jackson Powers-Johnson in there, and he can get healthy. And then I think the offensive line will take the next step. I think Andre James is kind of the same way. I think Andre James has never been a physical player. But that's why you want to mix in the zone with him. But even with the zone, he wasn't getting any push at all. So he's always performed better there. So that's what I'm saying. Maybe it's just Puna Ford just kind of dominating him and knowing exactly what to do with him. And maybe he can get better going forward because there have been some good moments with Andre James. Andre James has been a solid center in the NFL. So you expect him to get better. And maybe it's just a bad game, bad first game, everybody get used to each other and things like that. But it's more something that you could see improving just as they go along in the season, right? But then you get the real offensive line together, and that can really help them, and that can really push them forward. But I think sometimes Andre James is just going to lose just because he's just not the most physical guy. He's not the strongest player. I mean, he's a left tackle going into center. So if you know, sometimes he's just going to get beat. And I think that's just going to be something that we're going to see going forward. But I think there's going to be more good in the future games, and there is going to be more of what we saw against the Chargers.
Marcus, on a day, unfortunately for the Raiders defense, where they almost had to be perfect, they were just really, really, really good. But that's the fine line and the razor-thin edge sometimes with these Raiders, especially with that offense and the level of quarterback play. You almost have to be perfect. But the Raiders weren't perfect defensively. And there were three, at least I counted, three big mistakes that were made execution-wise. The two long runs by J.K. Dobbins and even the touchdown run by J.K. Dobbins. I think it was a 12-yarder where you know, there were some mistakes made. What did you see from the film on the run defense, especially on the big ones?
Yeah, on the big ones, what you saw was, you know, the kind of the linebackers just being a little bit too aggressive at the end of the game, and they were just shooting gas as they shouldn't. Like the long run from J.K. Dobbins, I think his longest run of the day, that went like 70 yards. What happened on that one is, you know, the defensive line really did his job, but then Diablo went to the wrong gap. And then that's all it took, him going to the wrong gap, and then J.K. Dobbins showed really good patience. It was a really good run from Dobbins, too. But he showed a lot of patience. Mm-hmm. And he's able to set it up and hit that gap that Diablo was supposed to be at. And if Diablo was more patient, then that's not a big run. And the Raiders might get the ball back. We're not even talking about Antonio Pierce being sure. 4th-and-1 and things like that. And it was just small things. And then on that same run, you know, Trayvon Moore took the terrible angle, and he ends up being a longer run than it should have. So it felt like in the fourth quarter, the offense maybe just struggling and not getting anything going. They just started to try to do too much in the run game, and there's guys just being too aggressive, like they just weren't playing like how they were earlier in the game. Because earlier in the game, they were pretty dominant across the line. I mean, Christian Wilkins had a game; his film is crazy. It's crazy to watch. It's insane. So he was crazy all game, and you know, it made you, when you watch it, you feel a little more optimistic about how they'll do against the Ravens, because the Ravens, especially on their right side, they don't look too good, right? But when you have Wilkins playing like that. But you got to have the linebackers behind them. They got to play well, too. It's not all about the defensive line. They can't make every tackle, right? I mean, you got to have the linebackers playing well. I thought Swain did play well for the most of the game, but I just felt like Diablo at the end of the game was just trying to do too much and trying to make a play when you just got to do your job. It was at the end of the game, it felt like a Bill Belichick moment for the defense, was just do your job. And if they would have just done their job, then those big plays wouldn't happen. But it felt like those guys were just trying to make a play, trying to get a spark since the offense is struggling so much.
Marcus Johnson, Tape Don't Lie, here with us. All right, then, looking ahead for week two against the Ravens. For many years, you've been studying Lamar Jackson's game. What are some tendencies that you're able to notice about this offense for the defenses that have been able to calm down what the Raiders or the Ravens are trying to do?
Yeah, I think with Lamar Jackson is that, I mean, of course, you got to make sure you got to put a spy on him or something to make sure that he's not running all over you, because he will if he has to, right? And the thing is, like, but if you get too much with a spy, he can pick you apart. And I think a lot of people don't like to talk about how Lamar Jackson can pass, but he is somebody that can pick you apart if you give him the opportunity to. And I think one of the things that, you know, I like how the Bills used to play him, and I think the Raiders would probably maybe do the same thing, is you got to play a lot of zone coverage against him and make him check it down. You got to make him not look for the big play, because that's what he likes. He likes to make big plays. He's not the type of guy who's just going to keep taking what the defense gives him. Okay. And eventually he might make a mistake trying to make a play. And I think that's what you got to get him into, is where we're going to give you these running backs. We're going to let you check it down all day. You're going to let you check it down to these other guys, but we're not going to let you throw the ball downfield on us. And he eventually starts to crack a little bit. He's going to try to get that ball down there, and he's going to try to throw that ball down there. And I think that's when you get those opportunities for him. And I also think this way the D-line was playing this game, and, you know, the Raiders aren't going to have to face Alton and Slater anymore. I think that's going to be a big factor in this game, is getting pressure on him early with four, too. And I think they're going to be able to do that, especially, you know, Wilkins has to go against Lele this next week, who really struggled against Chris Jones. And I'm telling you, Christian Wilkins looked like Chris Jones against the Chargers. So it's going to be that type of game where they're going to be able to get pressure on him, but they also got to make him kind of just be meticulous and just go down the field, you know, just a lot of short passes, make him throw short passes. Because if you look at, like, Lamar Jackson's ADOT, it's never going to be below where those other guys are. He's going to always be throwing the ball downfield. So you got to play to that tendency a little bit and make him throw to the running backs, make him throw to, you know, Justice Hill a lot, and see what he can do there and make him be consistent there, because eventually, like I said, he'll crack. he'll try to get downfield, and I think that's got to be the game plan.
Great stuff, Marcus. Thank you so much for coming on today, giving us the lowdown. We'll continue to watch what was up at Tape Don't Lie on YouTube. We appreciate your time. Thanks again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Follow him on X at TheMarkJohnNFL. All right, that's interesting, especially maybe just starting with the run fit, saying that the linebackers were too aggressive against what the Chargers were doing, and you know, making sure that you follow, you know, the right gaps, so that you're not exploiting too much on yourself. That could be fixed. That's all fixable. That's something the Raiders defense can do.
Yeah, I don't know if it was too aggressive. They just went to the wrong place. I mean, sometimes you just make a mistake. So it could be a combination of both, you know, in the whole scheme of things. But in the big runs, it was just mental errors. And here's the thing, and Marcus touched on this, which is absolutely correct. We always if the Raiders stop the Chargers right there, right? If they don't have the blown gasket like they had in a long run, and they force him to punt, is anyone talking about the decision that Antonio Pierce made?
No.
No, we'd just be talking more about the offense, depending on whatever they did or did right. not do. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that goes to the sometimes the nature of what we do, and fans included, with the second guessing, is that we
I don't think it would be as much of a discussion. As I think about it, I think it would still be
like there are people that are
there are people that will sit there and say, "Well, that was a missed was a missed possession, an elongated possession."
Right.
But yeah, it wouldn't be
And that's to me the great divide or why, you know, there's people on both sides of this argument is that you know, we focus on if the outcome doesn't work out right, then it's a bad decision. But then there's other people who are like, even if the outcome works out great, it was still a bad decision. And I don't know how you can necessarily say that.
It's tough.
Because especially as a coach, Vince, real quick, I'm sorry. Especially as a coach, you have confidence. You're showing confidence in your defense that I know that maybe, you know, going for it is probably the right thing to do. But I believe so much in our defense that we're going to get the ball back and be able to make something of this. That I'm gonna do this, and how is that wrong? Like Joe Torre once told me, if I have a conviction that this is gonna work out, that I believe in my players to execute what we're asking them to do, how am I wrong?
Yeah, I mean, there's no evidence that sits there and says even if they go for it, they got it, that it was still going to change the outcome.
Right.
So. That's
and if you don't get it.
So when we look at week one, I guess that will always be the big what if. What if he would have gone for? Would the offense have changed the result at all?
But that's it also goes to your point yesterday. Would he do it again? Like, what is it going to be based on? So this isn't just it's a week one thing and we're going to be thinking about it. But don't think for a second that some similar situation is gonna crop up this year. And I guess it'll be fascinating to see how it gets handled.
I would hope that this time you would have more confidence in the offense, or the offense would give you enough to say, hey, I'm confident that you can now get this 1 yard, because that was a struggle. Yeah.
And that goes back to what we were talking about yesterday. The offense has to create that confidence in the coach.
That's right.
You know, and also the play calling as well. Running out of the shotgun on that fourth down to me was, I just hate that. I hate running out of the shotgun on a fourth down like that.
You're not giving yourself an advantage. The timing will be off every time. In fact, coming up next, we'll get into more of this from the text line 702-365-9200. TJ Houshmandzadeh will join us at 9 o'clock. Once a Raider, always a Raider. And on Thursday Night Football, we hang out at Chickies and Pete's inside the Sahara. A injury update between the Bills and Dolphins. Raheem Mostert is out for the fish. So make sure you come down and join me. 5 to 8, we'll have great prizes, great food and drink specials. It's the Sahara. Always free parking. Chickies and Pete's here on Raider Nation Radio.
Traffic is brought to you by Meineke.
Wednesday, TJ Houshmandzadeh was set to join us at the top of the next hour in just a few minutes here on Raider Nation Radio. We'll get you more thoughts up on the text line at 702-365-9200. People very excited, very engaged on the Showbiz Pizza and the Shakeys. People very excited about the Shakeys coming up down the street, and they wanted to let me know that the Monday through Friday buffet is what the kids like.
You know, we are the morning tailgate, so
heck yeah.
You know, we are all about the food, and what is it?
More the better.
If it's free, it's for me.
That was Eric Dickerson. Yep.
Yeah,
if it's free, it's for me.
I'm gonna adopt that. That's my new that's my new line on life. Hey, you know, the NFL's a numbers game, and business is booming.
Yes, it is.
Some would say. 123 million week one total audience.
Gosh, I wonder how much.
123 million, the highest since 2019, pre-pandemic.
And that's in spite of everybody, so many people just rejecting it, right? I'm never watching the NFL again.
21 million average viewers, that's TV and digital, per game. The 21 million TV and digital per game. Most watched week one on record, up 12% from last year.
It's a beautiful thing. And then we've got college games on Saturdays. It's just football season is the best without question.
We haven't talked any college.
Yeah, I'm texting with some people about who the best college quarterback is. I'm not going to.
Oh, are we going to get into this? I don't think we have the time.
No, not right now. But kind of have to. It's something we got to monitor, guys.
You got to keep an eye on those quarterbacks.
Definitely got to keep an eye.
What did you think of Shadur? Leaving the game early.
Zero.
Vinny, he left the game early.
Did you watch the game?
I did.
He was getting the crap beat out of him. Uh-huh. He is playing behind. I can't. It's hard for me to believe that there's a that they're worse at the offensive line, but it feels like they're worse. And it's just he's got no chance. You know, he's literally got no chance. I'm not trying to make excuses for him, but he has no chance. And they were manhandled by Nebraska. By the way, their rookie quarterback looks pretty darn
Raiola.
Good.
Raiola.
Yeah,
he looks good. A Mahomes mini. Mm-hmm. Some are saying.
Yeah, you know he it's kind of like Kobe with Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, and he'll grow to be his own person. But right now, if you're a high school quarterback and you've got a similar, of course you're trying to emulate. It's an age old thing. It's always
and it's
happening.
Mannerisms though. Like when I was
Everything.
Watching Rayo,
it's really cool.
Like there was a lot of mannerisms. I was like, man, that does.
He
look
walks
like
him. He wears the headband. The face mask is very similar. But yeah, I mean, you know, keeping an eye on
Quinn,
the quarterbacks.
Quinn Ewers.
We said we weren't going to get into this.
I know,
but here
I'm sorry.
We are
I can't help
this.
It. I can't help myself.
But it's fine, because my question about Quinn, and he's looked fantastic, spectacular, but gosh, how much of that is Quinn and how much of it is just a byproduct of the talent that he has around him? Because I always go back to the USC quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little bit, it's kind of like Alabama cornerbacks sometimes.
Yeah.
It's easy to get caught up in them because when you have such a great defensive line in front of you, it makes your job a lot easier. When you were a quarterback back in the day at USC, and you're sitting behind NFL player, NFL player, NFL player in front of you, and NFL players behind you, and NFL players at wide receiver, and you just got to sit back there and just kind of scan everything and not really feel any danger. It's not easy to look good, but it's easier to look good.
Yeah, that's always the question in college. I said I wasn't going to get into this. I'm sorry. I can't help myself sometimes. TJ Houshmandzadeh coming up on the gate.